Okay, welcome once again to another Throttle Up radio show and podcast. I'm your host, Captain Kevin Smith, and I'm glad to be here. And thank you for joining us. We are in the midst of a major initiative. We call it also a special edition of the Throttle Up radio show and podcast. A special edition is called The Truth Algorithm. We've been running this for quite some time, and we will continue to do so. The reason for that ought to be obvious to almost everybody out there. If you're new to the show, keep in mind that we are not going to be passive, and we're not going to be standbys in this information war that's going on. We are engaged in information warfare, and that is the crux of the matter and the simple truth. We are engaged in information warfare, and our position here is we're going to fight back. And what is the weapon that we are going to use to fight back? The weapon of choice, I call it the weapon of choice, that we're going to use to fight back is the truth algorithm. The truth algorithm is a powerful weapon. All right. Now, you probably are thinking that I'm being hyperbolic. I am overstating. How can this possibly be? Never heard of it before, and all of the above. Okay. I understand that, all right? But Throttle Up Radio show and podcast is not about conventional thinking. It is all about thinking outside the box. It's all about critical thinking. Once you engage in critical thinking, you become a thought leader. You actually are able to think outside the box. Quickly now, let me get some of these administrative items complete. We are on Red State Talk Radio. We are on the weekends. We are a weekend show. We are on Red State Talk Radio both Saturdays and Sundays on both channels. Okay, so both and both. That's a good way to think about it. For the Justice or the Encore channel, we are on 6 p.m. Eastern Time, both Saturdays and Sundays. And the Liberty or Main channel, we're on 7 p.m. Eastern Time, both Saturdays and Sundays. We have a website. And it's a good website, by the way. So you should go there without question. ThrottleUpRadio.com is our website. All of our podcasts are posted on the website. We also have the Truth Algorithm Part 1 and Part 2 videos posted on the website. This is a big deal. I mean, this is huge. We have the last segment of the Truth Algorithm video series, which we call Part 3, and that should be available very soon. Eventually, we will, very quickly now, we'll have the Truth Algorithm video series posted on the ThrottleUpRadio.com website. No, you can also find our podcast on iTunes as well. All right, so let me get into the discussion part of the show. I mentioned that this is all about the truth algorithm, okay, and how we can use that, how we should use something like it, and I'm going to say we should use it, okay, to keep it simple and straightforward. We should use the truth algorithm. We should understand what it is. We should understand how we can use it and how we can use it to defeat propaganda, to stop propaganda dead in its tracks. Remember this. This is important. And I'm not sure very many people are talking about it from this perspective, but it is very, very important. All right. Propaganda is put out into the social sphere of those who can receive it. So think of it as transmission and reception. Okay, propaganda is put forth. It is transmitted through various media channels to the consumers of information, which is the large portion of the society. They are the consumers of information. Propaganda does not work unless the consumers of that information, which we could call propaganda, distortions, and deceptions, it doesn't work unless those consumers of that material actually believe that it is true. They believe it is true because it is masquerading as the truth. And so the unsuspecting consumer, I would say the conventional wisdom, it's not correct, but the unsuspecting consumer will accept it as true because of where it is coming from. Unquestionably, it's got to be true because, for example, a government agency has said so, or a notable media outlet has said so, or has written about it. And so it is believed to be true. In actuality, it is not true. We can say it is actually not true. Okay? It is objectively untrue. But for it to work, it actually has to be believed. We have to believe that it is true, even though it is objectively not true. So, there is an important place in which intervention can occur. Now, I'm going to present you with a proposition here. Okay, the proposition, at least in the immediate future, is that the lies will continue. People who are paid to lie will continue to lie to us. Government agencies will, over the short term, continue to lie to us on a nonstop basis. Okay? That is my proposition, is that these lies will, in fact, continue. We can also call these lies the big lies, the big lie, propaganda, of course, distortions and deceptions on a grand scale. That's the big lie. That will continue. The way we can intervene in this process is on the receiving end. Okay? The lies do not work unless they are believed to be true. This is so important that I cannot stress how the level of importance is beyond belief. It is the most important thing we need to understand now, is that the lies will not work, the propaganda will not work unless it is believed to be true. We can stop propaganda, lies, deceptions, and the big lie dead in its tracks because we can examine it from the perspective or by utilizing the truth algorithm, we can look at it objectively and analytically, both come together and determine objectively and analytically that it is in fact not true what they are saying. We can actually do that. We have the power to do that. We can disseminate the truth algorithm. They can disseminate propaganda. When I say they, I'm talking about the official liars of the world, can disseminate propaganda, distortions, and deceptions. We can disseminate the truth algorithm through the same channels. We can do that, okay? We have that ability. We haven't exercised it yet, but we can disseminate the truth algorithm and everything that it means, utilizing the same mechanisms and channels of communication. We can get this out throughout the whole society. If the society was armed with the truth algorithm, then propaganda will, and we will win the information war. We have found a way to defeat those who are engaged in information warfare against us. Okay, so the first order of business is to explain everything that we need to know about the truth algorithm on Throttle Up Radio, and we're doing that. Okay, this is getting out there into everybody's listening device. I'm talking to my audio engineer, and right, any listening device that can be connected to the internet, right? You know, so anybody, I mean, that has access to an internet and has a listening device. It could be a cell phone. It could be a computer, laptop computer. What is that called? That's an iPad. Is that what that's called? An iPad and stuff like that. Any place, right? So it can get out there. So Throttle Up Radio Show has a, how would you say that? A wide reach, right? You know, global. You know, we can actually think of this as having a global reach on humanity. Okay. Also, we have the Truth Algorithm video, part one and part two, available to be viewed by anybody with a device that can play back a video posting on it's YouTube, isn't it? It is? Yes, it's YouTube, right? So the video is posted on the YouTube platform and our website. So our website can link into the YouTube platform, and you can actually view right now, you can view the Truth Algorithm, Part 1 and Part 2. We, by the way, are on this end, we're very happy that we have the Truth Algorithm video out there for public viewing, and we're also quite proud of it. I happen to think it's a nice, it's a nice piece of work. It's a nice product that I think is very, very beneficial and important now in winning this information war, becoming the victors in this information warfare situation that we find ourselves in. Now, we are going to, let's see if I have the right time here. I'm trying to organize my thoughts. Yes, I think we can start. Got a couple more minutes. All right, so I'm going to repeat myself a little bit, but that's okay. All right, there's a lot of stuff I want to say keep this in mind, all right? Propaganda doesn't work unless the consumer of the information believes it to be true, but it is in fact objectively not true. Okay. Now, also keep this in mind. There's a lot of people that are being paid to lie. And this is the most outrageous thing that has occurred in any modern industrial society. We have the ability to communicate like never before, and these communication channels are being corrupted because they are putting out things that are simply not true, and people that are employed on the transmission side of this, they are being actually paid to lie to us. They know it's a lie, but they want us to believe that it is in fact true. This is a major philosophical component of the truth algorithm. Is that the right word? I'm talking to my audio engineer. Yes, yes. And that is crucial in understanding what the truth algorithm is all about and what it can do for us. We have to realize that there is, in fact, a massive effort to put out information in the information channel arena that is, in fact, not true, but it is masquerading as the truth. And now we have a way to determine whether or not an assertion or proposition that claims to be true is, in fact, true. We have that. Now, we talked about some of the key aspects of the truth algorithm. Keep in mind, the truth algorithm is empowered by a proven mathematical theorem that is optimized to function under conditions of uncertainty. And when we're dealing with this whole issue of propaganda, or this whole issue of information warfare, keep this in mind. We are actually not certain. We are operating under conditions of uncertainty. And the uncertainty deals with whether or not this thing that they are putting forward is in fact true. We are just not certain of that. The truth algorithm has the mechanisms that enable us to clarify and determine when we are operating under conditions of uncertainty, if something is likely or it is certainly true or not true. We can actually determine that analytically, and we employ mathematical theorems in order to do that. I know that sounds completely outrageous, but it's true. All right? Why we haven't been doing this before is beyond me. I cannot figure it out. We ought to have been using this years and years and years ago, decades ago, when this first came up, and I don't know why we haven't been using these the power of abstract analytic reasoning and the power of mathematical theorems to help us determine what is true and what is not true. I'm going to play something now. All right, so we're going to start this audio clip. This shows you the depth and breadth of the propaganda machine that is active and that is being employed to destroy this culture in this society. This is the most depressing thing, but it is a call to arms. So this section here, or this audio clip, it is with Jesse Waters, and I'm going to play this because it clarifies what we are faced with. But further than that, it is actually a call to arms. We should be so outraged about what has occurred in this country, in this political sphere, that we should be quickly arming ourselves with the truth algorithm. Here we go.
I'm sure you all saw the Super Bowl. Close game, talented young quarterbacks, down to the last drive. In the end, there could only be one champ, so congrats to the LA Rams for lifting the Lombardi Trophy. But like all games, it wasn't without a little controversy. There was a missed pass interference call on the Bengals' big touchdown to start the second half. Maybe. Did they call a ticky-tack pass interference on the Bengals to set up the last Rams touchdown? Probably. These things can go either way, but they usually even out in the end. The officials had a good game. They let them play, which isn't always the case.
That's court misconduct! That's a warning!
It was an accident! Come on! I thought she was in play!
Not a chance!
What? We're sweating like grease monkeys out here!
But what happens if the refs don't throw flags on one team? What if they only penalize the Bengals while the Rams just march up and down the field? Even worse, what if the refs partnered up with one of the teams? Seems totally unfair, right? Well, that's essentially what happened with the 2016 election. The refs of our political system, the media, FBI, and the intelligence community, not only failed to keep Hillary Clinton in check, they connived together. The country's still dealing with the consequences. It's been no secret that Hillary refused to accept the results of the election.
Trump knows he's an illegitimate president.
I do think that he knows he's an illegitimate president. Mm. And because of that, he's very insecure about it. Mm-hmm. Look what he's trying to do now. I mean, part of the Ukraine scandal that is slowly coming to light is he's trying to figure out how to say, no, it wasn't the Russians, even though our intelligence community and everyone who's looked at this said, yeah, it was the Russians. He's trying to say, no, somehow it was, Obama, Hillary, whoever.
Hillary's been unable to move on. And now we know why. She's just sticking with her story. You can't change an alibi. This weekend, special counsel John Durham dropped a bombshell report. They don't call her crooked for nothing. Durham's team filed in court, and if there was ever any doubt that Clinton was behind the Russia hoax, that's officially gone. Durham's documents show that Hillary Clinton hired people who hacked into Trump's home and office computers before and during his presidency and planted evidence that he colluded with Russia. Yeah, you heard that right. Hillary broke into a presidential candidate's computer server and a sitting president's computer server, spying on him. There, her hackers planted evidence, fabricated evidence connecting Trump to Russia, then fed that doctored material to the feds and the media. At first, she just did this to distract from her own email scandal. But then when Trump beat her, she used this hoax as an excuse for losing. This launched a criminal investigation aimed at taking down a sitting president. Hillary Clinton broke the law to frame Trump as a Russian traitor. The media, the so-called umpires of our democracy, went along with the frame job. For years, they backed up whatever lies Hillary was spewing about Donald Trump.
The president is a Russian operative.
This cloud about collusion with Russia will hang over him no matter where he stands.
It does look like he's listening to Putin more than he is American intelligence.
We're about to find out if the new president of our country is going to do what Russia wants. The presidency is effectively a Russian op.
And when some real information came to light, like the fact that the Steele dossier was as phony as my eighth grade girlfriend who supposedly went to another school, they doubled down on their denial. and they trash John Durham's investigation into their own lies. Listen.
The biggest scandal was when they spied on my campaign. They spied on my campaign.
There's no real evidence of that.
Of course there is.
No.
It's all over the place. Leslie,
sir,
they spied on my campaign and they got caught.
Donald Trump and William Barr promised that Durham would expose huge corruption, but he hasn't done that.
It's apparently an ongoing, concerted Republican and pro-Trump project to try to turn the investigation of the Russia scandal into some kind of scandal itself.
Oh, no. Okay, wait till the Durham report comes out. And then nothing happens and they just move on to the next conspiracy theory.
The media failed to police Hillary, the dirty cop of politicians, as she pushed an insurrection. The left loves to memorialize January 6th as an attack on our democracy. But if that's true, then what's this? The Russia hoax and the three-year Mueller investigation did more to undermine faith in our democracy than January 6th. Look at the impact it's had on our country. The credibility of the FBI and the CIA shattered. Federal prosecutors at the Department of Justice no longer trusted. A presidential campaign was broken into, was spied on. And who knows how the Russia hoax affected that race. The 2018 election was interfered with. The Mueller investigation hung a dark cloud over those midterms, costing Republicans the House. The nation was divided. Our foreign policy was affected. And it led to some arguments that ruined quite a few Waters family holidays. Durham's probe has cost 10% of what Mueller's has. And with less time and resources, he found the smoking gun. Was Mueller trying to find answers, or was he covering the left's tracks? We know the answer. Mueller was a mop-up job, and he was just there to tee up impeachment. According to Durham's filing, this hacking of Trump dates all the way back, you ready, to 2014, well before he came down that golden escalator. Former Director of National Intelligence, John Ratcliffe, has revealed that Hillary's motives to frame Trump were no secret. The CIA, FBI, the DOJ, and even Obama himself were briefed that the Russia hoax was a Clinton dirty trick. But they all went along with it, didn't they? Ratcliffe believes that there is more than enough evidence for, quote, multiple indictments. So who could be next? Are James Clapper and John Brennan next on the chopping block? They did a pretty good job of trying to throw us off Hillary's trail. Listen to how they responded when former Attorney General William Barr said in congressional testimony he believed Trump was spied on.
Well, I was very disappointed in what Attorney General Barr said today about spying when he was referring to the investigation that was predicated, certainly, and that the FBI was trying to understand exactly what the Russians were doing.
I thought it was both stunning and scary. I was amazed at that and rather disappointed that the Attorney General would say such a thing. That, you know, the term spying has all kinds of negative connotations, and I have to believe he chose that term deliberately.
Yeah, feds usually circle the wagons around other feds, so who knows what's going to happen to those two clowns. But this is a level of corruption not seen in American history. This is more brazen than the Watergate break-in. Hillary's hackers broke in, planted evidence, then got the feds to try throwing a president out of office. Isn't it time she faced the consequences?
Yeah.
Has the time finally come? Are we witnessing the end of the Clinton dynasty, one of the five families of the Democrat Party? It looks like Hillary's played her last get-out-of-jail-free card, while Bill's felt the wrath of the Me Too movement and lost his pilot's wings from his days on Jeffrey Epstein's Lolita Express. And Bill Clinton was on those flights.
Numerous times.
On the flights that Bill Clinton was on with Jeffrey Epstein, the stewardess, or stewardesses, many of them were underage, were dressed as candy stripers.
Correct.
And there were beds
times,
in the back of the plane?
Beds. Bedroom, yes.
Even the Clintons' phony charity foundation's been exposed as a pay-for-play scheme. Sorry, Chelsea, but I think your parents have left you high and dry.
That paints the picture. Is actually has happened and continues to happen. Continues to corrupt our society. That's a grim picture. But we have to be realistic. We cannot hide our heads in the sand any longer. We have to be realistic. We have to accept the fact that this is, in fact, reality. This is, in fact, our reality. And we have to do something about it. Now, keep in mind what the theme of this show is, which is the those of us who are on the receiving end of all of this made up, this propaganda, this official lying. There are many, many instances during the history of this massive propaganda movement that was put into place. We have many, many cases in which we could have then examined it through the lens of the truth algorithm and come away from the examination by questioning the validity of the assertion, by questioning the appropriateness of the assertion, by actually determining that the assertion or the proposition was in fact not true. It was just a pack of lies. It was a massive effort at propaganda. And I'll give you one example, which I have done this on previous shows as well, but I'll give you one example. The Trump dossier. Okay. The Trump dossier, when it was released by the press, I don't remember who actually did release it, but the Trump dossier, when you read it, and through the lens of critical thinking and the truth algorithm, you can see that there are many, many sections of it that are simply unverifiable. It's not that they are not verified. It is that they are not even capable of being verified. That should have been a massive red flag for all of us. That, wait a minute, this doesn't make any sense from a critical thinking and a truth algorithm standpoint. How can this possibly be? And then the FISA reports, the FISA applications, the three FISA applications, when you read that with respect to the Trump dossier, which was complete fabrication, you begin to see that there are massive efforts here, massive attempts to convince the American people of something that actually didn't occur, but they wanted us to believe that it was real, that it was factual, that it was accurate, but in fact it was not any of those things. Okay, now this is it's a little bit hard here utilizing the audio channels to get into some of the technical aspects of the truth algorithm. We have visited some of them in the previous Throttle Up Radio shows as well. But that's the reason why we also took the time and effort to produce and to make available the truth algorithm informational videos. All right. We have two of them posted. I mentioned this before, but it's okay to repeat because these are very, very important that we get the word out. We have two Truth Algorithm informational videos available on Throttle Up Radio Show, ThrottleUpRadio.com. That's our website for this radio show, ThrottleUpRadio.com. If you would click on the blog button, the video players come up for the Truth Algorithm Part 1 and Part 2. Also, keep in mind, as a resource, we have the Critical Thinking Essentials Quick Reference Handbook that is available nationally. You can get that anywhere, Barnes & Noble, Amazon. We also have an ebook version of that available. You can get that on Kindle. And so from a critical thinking standpoint, we have that as a resource as well. Just keep that in mind. Okay, we have another audio clip here, which relates to what we're talking about, which is let's not just blindly accept this propaganda, these big lies, ever again. If we did in the past, let's make a commitment now. We are not going to buy into this. They can do it, but we're not going to accept it. We're not going to buy into this. And if we don't buy into it, then they fail. So let's listen to this from the Academy of Ideas. I use these people a lot. These are great people that do this. I would highly recommend you go to their website, YouTube channel, and contribute to their efforts. Here we go.
Authoritarianism in religion and science, let alone politics, is becoming increasingly accepted. Not particularly because so many people explicitly believe in it, but because they feel themselves individually powerless and anxious. So what else can one do except follow the mass political leader or follow the authority of customs, public opinion, and social expectations? The American psychologist Rollo May wrote these words in 1953, and in the decades that followed, the West tiptoed into tyranny. A mass surveillance state was established. Free speech gave way to increasing levels of censorship. Statist bureaucracy and stifling regulations invaded ever more areas of life, and tax rates reached levels that in the past would have caused a revolution. However, in recent years, this tiptoe into tyranny has turned into a sprint, as some Western countries are flirting with full-blown totalitarian rule. But the existence of power-hungry and psychologically disturbed politicians who desire total control is not what makes our situation particularly precarious, for such individuals exist in all ages. Rather, our troubles lie with the fact that very few people possess the one virtue that can turn the tide back in the direction of freedom, that being the virtue of courage. And as Alexander Solzhenitsyn warned in 1978, a decline in courage may be the most striking feature which an outside observer notices in the West in our days. Should one point out that from ancient times, declining courage has been considered the beginning of the end? In this video, we are going to explore how a hyperconformity and blind obedience has infected the West and, in the process, crowded out the cultivation of courage. We will discuss how a widespread cowardice is permitting the rise of authoritarianism, and how a rebirth of courage is the antidote to our precarious political predicament. The pathological conformity that infects the West is generations in the making and the result of a confluence of factors. It is driven by a value system in which social validation occupies a preeminent position. It is furthered by the use of social media and the fact that success on these platforms is achieved by virtue signaling and conforming to the moral flavors of the day. It is also a product of an education system which deifies the democratic ideal and promotes the rights of the majority over the rights of the individual. These factors, combined with others, has created a society of hyperconformists. And as Rollo May explained, the opposite to courage, in our particular age, is automaton conformity. One of the ways that Western conformity manifests is through a blind obedience and a pathological need to follow rules. Most people believe that to be a good person is to be a compliant person, and to do what one is told by those in positions of political power and their lackeys in the media and celebrity culture. In acting with blind obedience, the conformist fails to differentiate between morality and legality, and so remains willfully ignorant of the fact that government rules can be immoral, driven by corruption, and that sometimes they pave the way for individual and social ruin. Or as Rollo May explains, "Our particular problem in the present day is an overwhelming tendency toward conformity. In such times, ethics tend more and more to be identified with obedience. One is good to the extent that one obeys the dictates of society. It is as though the more unquestioning obedience, the better. But what really is ethical about obedience? If one's goal were simple obedience, one could train a dog to fulfill the requirements very well. To see other people exercise independent judgment, self-responsibility, and self-reliance disturbs the conformist's belief in the value of obedience and so threatens their sense of self. It is not the case, therefore, that the conformist obeys while permitting others the freedom to make their own choice. Rather, as Stanley Feldman explains in a paper titled Enforcing Conformity, people who value social conformity support the government when it wants to increase its control over social behavior and punish nonconformity. Valuing social conformity increases the motivation for placing restrictions on behavior. The desire for social freedom is now subservient to the enforcement of social norms and rules. Thus, groups will be targeted for repression to the extent that they challenge social conformity. When a majority advocates for the government enforcement of conformity, a society places itself on what the psychologist Irvin Staub called a continuum of destruction. As the government uses coercion and force to punish a non-compliant minority, the majority rationalizes their support of such authoritarian measures by further demonizing the non-compliant, thus leading to increasingly severe government measures. One psychological consequence of harm doing is further devaluation of victims. People tend to assume that victims have earned their suffering by their actions or character. In several countries in the 20th century, such as the Soviet Union, Turkey, Germany, Cambodia, and China, government measures such as banning certain minority groups from restaurants, pubs, cafes, and other public spaces, imposing curfews, expelling them from their jobs, forcing them to pay fines, and restricting their freedom of movement and assembly, functioned as the first steps on a continuum of destruction that ended in mass scapegoating, mass imprisonment, and mass murder. In his book, The Psychology of Good and Evil, Irvin Staub elaborates on the psychological mechanism that facilitates a continuum of destruction. How does harmful behavior become the norm? Doing harm to a good person or passively witnessing it is inconsistent with a feeling of responsibility for the welfare of others and the belief in a just world. Inconsistency troubles us. We minimize it by reducing our concern for the welfare of those we harm or allow to suffer. We devalue them, justify their suffering by their evil nature or by higher ideals. A changed view of the victims, changed attitude toward that suffering, and a changed self-concept result. To counter the continuum of destruction that is a product of too much conformity and too much government force, more people need to act with moral courage. Moral courage entails a willingness to encounter risks so as to defy immoral orders, reject authoritarian government control, and to stand up for the disappearing values of truth, freedom, and justice. And as Rushworth Kidder explains in his book, Moral Courage, "Where there's no danger, there's no courage. Anyone can endure security and well-being. The real challenges arise in the face of hazard. So it is with moral courage, where danger is endured for the sake of an overarching commitment to conscience, principles, or core values. Some acts of moral courage are accompanied by mild risks, such as being ridiculed, insulted, or ostracized. If, for example, we speak out against a status quo belief in the presence of a group of conformists, or if we refuse to adhere to social practices or mandates that are immoral or idiotic, we may lose friends or attract choice words from the obedient, but this is a small price to pay in exchange for doing what we believe is right. For as Rollo May explains, the hallmark of courage in our age of conformity is the capacity to stand on one's own convictions. However, sometimes acts of moral courage are accompanied by more grave risks, including but not limited to the loss of employment, physical or financial penalties, imprisonment, or in some cases, even death. Of all the agonizing ethical dilemmas facing humanity, writes Rushworth Kidder, few are more wrenching than the choice between what's right for the world and what's right for you and your family. Carl Jung called the men and women willing to confront great dangers in defiance of tyranny the true leaders of mankind. And to learn about the mindset of one of these leaders, we can turn to the story of Viktor Pestov. In 1967, Pestov was a 20-year-old living in the Soviet Union. His family was well off by Soviet standards, and his mother was a high-ranking member of the KGB. Yet Pestov could not avert his eyes from the boot of tyranny that was crushing society, and so he took a keen interest in political matters. And when Soviet tanks rode into Czechoslovakia and violently stamped out the human rights protest known as the Prague Spring, Pestov told his friend, "We must do something about this." Pestov and his brother set up a clandestine group called Free Russia, and he warned those who joined that they would likely be arrested within the year. Yet all agreed that the battle for freedom justified the risk, and so they began publishing pamphlets exposing the lies of the Soviet regime and snuck out in the dead of night to distribute them. The KGB quickly identified the group as a threat, and in 1970, Pestov was arrested. His mother was fired from the KGB and never allowed to work in Russia again, and Pestov was sentenced to 5 years in a Soviet prison camp. Pestov decided to stand up to the Soviet regime and therein place himself and inadvertently his mother in great danger, because he could not in good conscience sit idly by as a corrupt regime of thousands destroyed the lives of millions. He understood that if he did not stand up for the freedom of others, he could not expect others to stand up for his, and that if nobody did anything, everyone was doomed. And so, he chose to face danger, to fight for freedom, and to place a portion of the fate of society on his back. He saw himself as fighting against the malevolent idea that someone will think for you, someone will make decisions for you, and as he explained, a person should be the master of his own fate. In a conversation with Rushworth Kidder, Pestov reflected on the grave dangers he voluntarily faced and on the 5 years he spent in prison. "I believe I did the right thing," Pestov concluded. "I wasn't silent. I was saying and doing what I had to do. There was a very small contribution of mine to the fact that the communists were pushed out of power." Unless more people can muster up the moral courage to renounce conformity in favor of standing up for freedom and for what is right, and at the very least make a small contribution to combating tyranny, Western societies will continue moving towards what Ayn Rand called the stage of the ultimate inversion, or as she warns, "We are fast approaching the stage of the ultimate inversion, the stage where the government is free to do anything it pleases, while the citizens may act only by permission, which is the stage of the darkest periods of human history, the stage of rule by brute force."
Okay, so that paints a picture for us, again, clarifies what we are faced with, the environment that we live in, the world we live in. It's important for us as we consider using, another way of saying that, employing the truth algorithm. We have to understand that it is essential that we clarify the environment that we live in and the specific situation that we have encountered. Okay. That clarification then is, or we can say it this way, that clarification activates the truth algorithm, or that it is that which activates the truth algorithm. So the truth algorithm does not exist in a vacuum. The truth algorithm is to be used by us when we have encountered situations that demand its usage. All right. Now, I may not have said that perfectly, but I think you get my meaning here. All right. So the Academy of Ideas has pointed out something crucial. and helped me as well in pointing out something crucial. What is it that we are facing? What are the defining characteristics of the environment that we find ourselves in? And what is the specific situation? A specific situation, those things kind of come and go. They're based upon events or event analysis or something like that, okay? We talked about that previously, about utilizing an event-driven model, not a data-driven. We talked about that. But the environment and the situation are crucial. Once we understand what that is, then the truth algorithm exists on a firm foundation, because then it can be employed properly. And that gives us a running start. It gives us a leg up. It gives us the wherewithal from which we can activate the truth algorithm. The truth algorithm is based upon a priori understanding of what is it that has occurred. And this is crucially important. We have covered this in great detail in the truth algorithm video. So please go there to the Throttle Up Radio website and access the truth algorithm part one and part two. Okay, my audio engineer that says that I'm approaching the end. Is this the end of the another Throttle Up Radio show? Some closing remarks. I have a few minutes. I have a few seconds here to make some closing remarks. And that is one of a trust, one of commitment. Do not get discouraged. Okay? That is the key takeaway here. Do not get discouraged. We have the ability within ourselves to persevere and to win in the end. So let's not get discouraged. Let's be motivated to employ the truth algorithm and to defeat this propaganda machine. We will see you all next week.